The Knowledgeable Provider podcast is intended primarily to entertain, also to inform, but it is not a substitute for actual medical training and should not be used by anyone to diagnose or treat any medical condition in themselves or others. If you need medical advice, please make an appointment to see your own knowledgeable medical provider. The opinions expressed by me and anyone else who happens to appear on the podcast are solely those of the people expressing them and are not necessarily representative of any other entities. Other than the lunches at the office, I do not receive any sort of compensation from pharmaceutical or medical device companies, and I have no other relevant financial disclosures. Look, this is all for fun, okay? Don't sue me. All right, on with the show. Hey there, welcome back to Knowledgeable Provider. I'm your host, Jody Marks. Today I want to talk about a class of medications that is kind of showing up everywhere these days. That is the monoclonal antibody type medication. I kind of think of these as being new medications just because we've seen so many of them come out in the past few years. But actually, they've been around for a long time. The first one came out way back in 1985, so they've been around as long as I've been alive, almost. And I think that diversity in the number of medicines there are and how many different things they treat can be just a little confusing. So I wanted to just do a basic review of what monoclonal antibodies actually are and go over kind of the basic mechanism of how they work and some of the things that we use them to treat. You know, when I learn about a medication, and I give the students the same advice, when you learn about a medication or a lot of medications, you don't try to memorize every detail about every single medication. You want to learn about the class of medicine, and then you have a general idea of what those type of medications do, right? And for the most part, the way I recognize or remember what class a medication is in is by its name. Because typically you can look at the suffix of the name of a medication, the generic name, and figure out what class it's in, right? So anything that ends in an LOL is typically a beta blocker, right? Atenolol, metoprolol. Anything that ends in pril is an ACE inhibitor. Anything that ends in sartan is an angiotensin receptor blocker. And initially when I started becoming aware of monoclonal antibody medications, I would read about or see an ad for a particular monoclonal antibody that was for some specific condition. And I would go, oh, okay, monoclonal antibodies end in MAB and they're used to treat asthma, or they're used to treat dermatological conditions, or they're used to treat cancer. But eventually you realize that there's no consistent bucket that you can put these things in other than the general mechanism of how they work, because they're used to treat all sorts of things. So that little trick of using the suffix doesn't necessarily work for all these monoclonal antibodies, but you can at least realize that you're talking about a monoclonal antibody and recognize that, and then figure out what condition you're talking about or what it's being used for. There actually is a naming convention for these medicines. I think medicine names in general are just a fascinating thing. It's always interesting to see how they come up with the different generic and brand names for all these things. But there actually is a uniform way of naming monoclonal antibodies. Again, not new, developed like 30 years ago by a group that's part of the WHO. And so if you look at the name of one of these medications, the name actually specifies the proposed target, the original host, the modifications that have been made to it, and conjugation to other molecules. So that actually is way more useful than my little trick for just learning the general suffix of medications. But obviously you have to know what you're looking at. So the prefix of these drugs is random. So that's where they allow for some unique naming from the pharmaceutical companies, I guess, to create a distinct drug name. So then you get into what's called the substim or the infix, which designate the target. So for example, CI means cardiovascular, SO means bone, TA means tumor. The next part is the source or the host the antibody was originally produced in. So the letter U stands for human, O stands for mouse. And then the next part is modifications. So for example, XI means chimeric, ZU means humanized. So a couple of examples. And I have no idea if I'm pronouncing any of these correctly, but for example, bevacizumab, B-E-V-A-C-I-Z-U-M-A-B, the CI indicates that it targets the cardiovascular system, and the ZU means that it's humanized. So this is a humanized monoclonal antibody that targets the cardiovascular system. Another example would be denosumab, D-E-N-O-S-U-M-A-B. D-E-N is the prefix. The O-S indicates that it targets bone. I guess that kind of makes sense. Osteo, osteous, O-S. And then the U indicates that it is humanized. So this is a human monoclonal antibody used to treat osteoporosis. How about that? This convention has changed a little bit as these drugs have continued to be produced and evolve. Medications made after 2017 will not have the second part of the substem, like whether it's humanized or chimeric. And then the suffix part, initially they were all MAB, M-A-B. So any of them developed between 1990 and 2022 have the MAB suffix, with rare exceptions. So most of them have that MAB suffix. In 2021, they developed some additional suffixes just because there were so many of these medications coming out to help decrease how many of them sound alike, which is very thoughtful and helpful. So anything developed after 2022 is actually not going to have that MAB suffix. So the new suffixes are TUG, T-U-G. That is a full-length, unmodified immunoglobulin that recognizes a single thing, so monospecific antibodies. BART, B-A-R-T, is full-length, monospecific immunoglobulins that have constant regions or point mutations that have been introduced into them by engineers. MIG, M-I-G, is for immunoglobulins that are specific to multiple things, not just one. MENT, M-E-N-T, is for those that have variable region fragments that are monospecific. So they have pieces that are specific for just one thing. So there you go. If you're interested in memorizing all that, you can tell just by the name of one of these things basically what it's for. A little more complicated than looking at LOL or Prill. So how exactly do these things work? In general, an antibody is a thing that binds to an antigen in the body, right? And so in general, what these things are is fake or substitute antibodies that can mimic or modify or enhance the natural immune response to something. So they're synthetic molecules that act like natural antibodies. They bind to some antigen that causes the immune system to do something or to stop doing something. And obviously that's a very broad way to say that. So some specific functions that you might be looking for from one of these, probably the goal that's made the most news lately is for flagging cancer cells. So the synthetic antibodies go in, target the cancer cells, and sort of mark them for the immune system to then destroy. Sometimes you can use an antibody to block the connection between a cancer cell and a protein that's necessary for its growth, so you just stop it from growing. Or you can target the blood vessels that have to grow to supply cancer cells and prevent those from growing, thus preventing the cancer cells from growing. Some of them are used as what are called checkpoint inhibitors. So they target specific things that are like brakes, as in B-R-A-K-E-S, like to stop your car, or protectors that shield specific things from the immune system. So these are the things that limit the immune system from becoming excessively active. And so you can use monoclonal antibodies to essentially disable the brakes so that the immune system is able to attack these abnormal things. Some monoclonal antibodies can actually directly attack cancer cells. They can be used to deliver radiation treatment, right? Because if it's going to clamp onto a cancer cell, you might as well stick a little radioactive something on it and give some radiation directly to where it's needed. Same thing with chemotherapy. You can target the chemo directly at the receptors you want, or you can use these to kind of hook the immune cells up with the cancer cells. You can use the monoclonal antibody to sort of facilitate the attachment of a cancer cell and a specific immune cell. Really, really cool stuff. Very cool technology there. So obviously what you're looking for in a monoclonal antibody is affinity for a target antigen. We want to make sure that it has adequate affinity for the receptor that's being targeted. We want antibodies that can recruit different immune mediators. So whether that means we're turning on or turning off the immune system, we want a target for the antibody that is a cell surface antigen, right? So of course the monoclonal antibody has to be able to get to the receptor that it's looking for. Apparently one of the things that they're kind of investigating now is how to get monoclonal antibodies inside the cell so you can actually start targeting some intracellular proteins instead of just cell surface antigens. Or you may want a target that is a plasma protein or a drug. So some specific examples there that are commonly used would be tumor necrosis factor, TNF, or vascular endothelial growth factor, VEGF, both plasma proteins. Or drug examples would be like the monoclonal antibody that is used to reverse dabigatran, the direct oral anticoagulant, or the monoclonal antibody that's used to reverse digoxin. So there you want your target to be specific drugs. The target can also be an IgG receptor. So that would be a situation where you're trying to slow down the immune response to something. So an example of that is a monoclonal antibody called rozanolixizumab, which is directed against the IgG binding region of a particular receptor that can reduce IgG levels. So that one in particular is approved for myasthenia gravis. Or another similar one is called efgartigimod alpha. Same idea, the goal is to reduce the amount of IgG, and that's used for the treatment of myasthenia gravis also. The target of these can be an infectious organism. For instance, we heard a lot about monoclonal antibodies developed to target COVID-19. Those sort of came along before the vaccines did during the pandemic. Those worked by using monoclonal antibodies to target the spike protein of the COVID-19 virus. And initially, those were super effective, but once we started having different variants, and also once the vaccines and the antiviral medications came along, those were withdrawn, and the emergency use authorization of those were withdrawn, so we didn't see those used anymore. Another example of that type would be palivizumab, which is directed against RSV. And in most of these cases, the monoclonal antibodies work by making it impossible for the viruses to actually get into the cells where they would replicate. So that's how they specifically stop these viruses. They're working on some monoclonal antibodies like this against HIV, but apparently there are a bunch of different variants, so it's been of limited effectiveness. And it seems like there's some work being done to direct monoclonal antibodies at bacteria, but again, seemingly with limited success. So to recap so far, monoclonal antibodies are synthetic molecules that act like an antibody in that they bind a specific receptor site. So each one of these is designed to hit its specific desired receptor site and accomplish whatever the goal happens to be, whether that's killing cancer cells or reversing the effect of a medication or preventing the effect of a medication, slowing down the immune system response in an autoimmune situation. So that's why we see so many of these and so many variations in these, because that general concept is applicable to like just about everything. And in that way, this is a super exciting field because it seems like it's almost unlimited possibilities of what you might be able to accomplish if you find the right antibodies and antigens to do whatever you want to do in a disease situation. Some other specific indications that you might see monoclonal antibodies used for, of course, we've mentioned cancer several times. That can be hematologic malignancies like lymphoma, leukemia, solid tumors in the breast or lung. Of course, we mentioned autoimmune disorders or even disorders that have some immune component. The example here would be something like immune thrombocytopenia. Hypercholesterolemia is one I haven't mentioned yet. Remember, the PCSK9 inhibitor medications are monoclonal antibodies. Asthma is a popular one that we've heard more about lately. Osteoporosis, we're seeing those medications used fairly often when people can't tolerate the bisphosphonates or can't take the estrogen receptor modulators. They can actually be used to help prevent rejection of transplanted organs. And then we've already talked about infectious organisms, reversing drugs, and myasthenia gravis. So just super exciting. The possibilities there are seemingly limitless. It'll be exciting to see what things we're able to treat with these kind of medications going forward. And hopefully, as time goes on, they will become more available and less expensive. Of course, right now, a lot of these are branded medications, meaning they're super expensive. So it doesn't seem like we're going to be giving everybody that comes in with a cold a monoclonal antibody medication anytime soon. Man, wouldn't that be nice if we had some actual alternative for treating the common viral respiratory infections, rather than just trying to come up with some song and dance to do to keep people from asking for antibiotics. As far as the routes of administration of these monoclonal antibody medicines, they're all proteins. And so typically they're going to be administered parenterally, so either subcutaneously or IV. If you give them orally, they get degraded really fast by the enzymes in the digestive tract, and they're just not absorbed very well. So that's another area that's being worked on, is trying to figure out how to get these made into oral form so they're not as big of a deal to administer. As far as the pharmacokinetics, the dose just sort of depends on each individual medication and how it performs in clinical trials. The half-lives of these things are very different. They can be anywhere from a couple of days to several weeks. And of course, their specific affinity for their target also is going to play a role in how long they hang around. And of course, how often they're dosed depends on all those different things, which are potentially different for each medication. You can give more than one of these medications at the same time. That would be a benefit of having such a specific profile as far as what things they target, right? You know exactly what they are and are not going to target, so there should be room to use multiple ones. Whether you're doing multiple medications for different problems or you're doing multiple medications for the same problem. So there are a couple of cancer examples of where that's being done. the drugs ipilimumab and nivolumab are used concurrently in melanoma to target two different things. One is the CTLA-4, which triggers T lymphocytes to attack the melanoma cells, and the other is a checkpoint inhibitor that targets PD-1. So both of these are used concurrently to target the same overall problem, just with different mechanisms as far as different receptors that they target. Very, very cool. Another example of this would be in breast cancer that is HER2 positive. There are two monoclonal antibodies, pertuzumab and trastuzumab, that are used together. As far as adverse effects that you have to worry about with these medications, I actually already talked about that a little bit because we had the session at the Huntsville Hospital cardiology update about heart-related adverse effects of the monoclonal antibodies. One positive thing is that because they are synthetic recombinant molecules, they don't actually carry any risk of getting infections directly from the antibodies. But nevertheless, they do have adverse effects and reactions associated with them. You can have just an infusion reaction or a hypersensitivity reaction while you're getting a dose of one of these medications. You can have other types of immune-related adverse effects that affect the skin or the GI tract or endocrine organs. Where your risk for infection comes in, of course, is if you're using a monoclonal antibody to reduce the immune system function, then of course that's going to make you more prone to getting outside infections. Or if you're messing with the immune system, you can also cause some autoimmune issues. You can see downstream adverse effects of whatever thing you're starting or stopping. So for instance, if you're given a monoclonal antibody that blocks platelet aggregation, you might see some bleeding from that you didn't intend, right? If you're targeting a growth factor that leads to blood vessel formation, then you might see some issues with damage to normal tissue caused by not enough blood supply. So just things like that that all depend on the specific activity of the monoclonal antibody. There's a specific syndrome associated with some of the immunotherapy for cancers. This is called cytokine release syndrome. So you get this positive feedback situation where the T lymphocytes just keep on producing inflammatory cytokines. And so the symptoms you see from that are just going to be like an extreme form of an infusion reaction, fever, headache, nausea, feeling crappy, low blood pressure, rash, dyspnea, tachycardia, that sort of thing. Liver function can be affected, can cause DIC. So potentially bad stuff there that can come from adverse reaction to these. So sometimes in a situation where there's a higher risk of the cytokine release syndrome happening, they'll just pre-medicate with Tylenol or Benadryl like you would any other time you're giving something you are afraid will or expect will cause an allergic reaction. Fortunately, we haven't seen much resistance to monoclonal antibodies developing, but it's not impossible. For example, you can see types of cancer which mutate away from being responsive to a particular antibody, or viruses that mutate away from being responsive in the same kind of way. You can also see that the immune system will generate natural antibodies that work to neutralize the therapeutic antibodies. So that has actually happened with monoclonal antibodies for the tumor necrosis factor, epidermal growth factor receptor, and with the PCSK9 inhibitors. But it seems like that's not as big of a concern or as big of a deal as it is with, say, antibiotic resistance, which we all are familiar with. It seems like there's not a lot of data about when these can or cannot be used during pregnancy, but increasingly they are finding that they can be used for autoimmune diseases during pregnancy. The way that these medicines are produced and modified is pretty neat. The first thing you have to do is find an appropriate antibody. So the ways you can do that are either to obtain an existing antibody by isolating it from a patient, or immunize an animal with your target antigen and then see what antibodies the immune system produces to it. Or apparently you can go buy yourself a library of antibodies and just start testing each one of those to see if something responds to whatever you're looking for. That sounds like it would be a lot of work, a lot of tedious work. But there is some promise for using AI to develop these things. They can use these neural networks called protein language models, which are actually very similar to the language models that are used to train the AI that we're all now familiar with, like ChatGPT. You can train AI in a similar way to come up with different combinations of proteins to produce antibodies. So they can use those to generate immunoglobulins to improve their capability of binding to antigens, to looking for potential mutations that could come about, and to kind of predict how a particular antibody might mature and improve over time. So if you're doing this by just traditional methods, you would have to screen tens of thousands of antibodies to kind of find what you're looking for. But using an AI approach like that, you can kind of narrow it down to just a handful of variants without having to really do or test anything. So using those kind of methods could potentially really speed up the process of discovering new antibodies or coming up with antibodies for things that were previously very hard to target. If you're interested, the up-to-date article on this has a section about how they do the different modifications of the different fragments of the monoclonal antibodies. Honestly, I really don't care about that. But if you're very interested in this, if you're more of a science nerd than I am, you can go into up-to-date, check that out. So yeah, I think I'm going to stop there. That's a pretty good overview of what monoclonal antibodies are. I know I have a better understanding now of how these things work and what the overlying principles are and how we're using those to target different diseases. I'm not sure I'm going to be learning all that about the naming conventions, but it is nice to know that you could figure that out if you had the time, if you didn't know what one of these was for. So I hope this was interesting or helpful for you. If you have any questions, if you heard anything that I said wrong, if there's anything you'd like to add, feel free to contact me on the Knowledgeable Provider Facebook page by email at thekppod@gmail.com or through the website, thekppod.com. All right, that does it for this episode of Knowledgeable Provider. I'm your host, Jody Marks. Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to like, subscribe, or follow on your preferred listening platform. Give us a nice 5-star rating and leave a nice review. If you'd like to help support the show, you can do that at patreon.com/knowledgeableprovider. And as always, stay safe, take care of yourself, and take care of your patients in that order. The people.